Welcome, folks, to the Antisocial Podcast. My name is Andy Dowling, and I'm sure you guys know already, but I play bass in the Australian metal band Lord, and if you love a bit of 80s old-school heavy metal with a tinge of modern sound, oh, that's a great description, you can go over to lord.net.au and go and give our music a crack if you're feeling a little bit curious. We're also on Spotify as well, and I do understand that if you type in Lord on Spotify, you may struggle to find us, so what better way to discover the band by typing in Lord Prog Power USA, which is our brand new live album that was recorded in 2016 in Atlanta, Georgia, and you can go and check that out on Spotify as well as the rest of our back catalogue there. So lots of stuff to check out. Hope you enjoy the tunes. Now, in addition to playing in a band, I also host the Self-Starter Podcast, which is all about small business, self-employment, and freelancing. So if that is something that is of interest to you, you can go over to selfstarter.com.au or you can search for Self-Starter on your preferred podcast player. Now, moving along, this week's shout out. So for anyone that's new to the podcast, each and every week I do a shout out to somebody that supports this podcast, supports me. It could be Self-Starter, it could be Antisocial, it could be Lord, it could be just whatever. And it's anything. It could be leaving a review on Facebook or Apple Music or somewhere on the internet. It could be shouting me a beer via antisocial.net on my PayPal button. It could be buying an Antisocial t-shirt. It could be sending me a really encouraging message. It could be sharing it and tagging friends, all that kind of stuff. It all builds up. It all means a hell of a lot to me and helps this podcast and everything that I do get bigger and better. So, thanks to everyone, of course. But there can only be one each week. So this week is a big thank you to Corey Butler of Tarnit. In Victoria, is that how you pronounce it? No, you guys know me. I can never pronounce anything correctly, but Corey is hilarious. He's commenting on so much stuff. He's really interacting with the podcast on Facebook and on Instagram. He's created these own hashtags that he uses, which are quite funny. They're amusing. Hashtag Andy God of Bass and hashtag Lord Rules. And I think he did one the other day where he did a hashtag for every member of Lord as well. And it's just really fun. And it's definitely encouraging other people to interact as well. So thank you so much, Corey. I really appreciate the support and the love that you throw this way. It just means a hell of a lot. And it's just, it's really amusing to see that kind of, that support there. So thank you very much. It means a hell of a lot to me. Now, please send me a message when you listen to this, and remind me and give me your postal address and I will find something of, well, I was going to say something of worth, but it won't be something of worth, maybe to you, but we all like getting something in the mail. So I'll find something lying around and I'll shoot something out to you. So please remind me, shoot me a message on Facebook or Instagram or wherever else you prefer. Now, moving along, this week's episode is with Terra Rome. Now, you might not know Terra, but Terra's had a little bit of a spotlight recently because she became the first ever woman to walk around the whole of Australia solo and unassisted, like completely on her own. No assist, no vehicle trailing behind her, no backup, no medics, no nothing, completely on her own. It's about 17,000 kilometers around the entire country, and she did it in a number of stages over about a four-year period, and just an incredible feat. But that's only the scraping the surface with Terra. Terra's background of these epic expeditions have been going on for years, and Australia's obviously been the pinnacle of what she's done so far, but she's not slowing down. She's got a lot of stuff coming up. She's about to write a book, and she's just doing amazing things, not only for women and encouraging women to do amazing things and hopefully bringing more recognition to women that are already doing amazing things, but she's supporting a lot of really important causes as well. One of them in particular, which was the basis behind her trek around Australia, was for suicide prevention through Lifeline, which I think for many of us is something that's very close to us because we all know somebody that's been impacted by some form of mental health, even just like just depression. And I say that flippantly, but we all know that depression is a very serious thing to experience. And I think everyone experiences it in some form of another at some stage in their life. And for some people, unfortunately, it's far worse than others. So Terra used her walk around the country to raise more awareness and raise money for Lifeline and for suicide prevention and suicide awareness in general. So there's lots of stuff here. I'm going to let Terra explain it. I will give you some links before we kick into it, though. If you want to discover more about Terra, you can go to terraromes.earth. That's terraromes.earth. You can also find Terra on Facebook, which is, come on, Andy, it is facebook.com/terrarome. She's also on Instagram as well, so you can just search for Tara Roams. And I'm going to put a whole bunch of links over at andysocial.net as always. Now, if you know somebody that needs some help, I would strongly encourage you, and it goes without saying, but you can utilize Lifeline. There are a number of other organizations out there that do provide support for people in need. And this is not just in Australia, but globally. So please make sure that you do a little bit of research to see who's in your local area or in your country that provides any form of mental health support. But for Lifeline specifically, you can go to lifeline.org.au, or you can call Lifeline on 13 11 14, or if it's critical, then of course 000, or if you're in the States, it's 911. So please keep those things in mind. We need to take this stuff more seriously and talk about it more as well. And we definitely touch on this in this episode, and it's a running theme with some of our guests here. And it's something that I feel is really, really important to highlight. So I'm glad that I'm having multiple opportunities to raise these topics with amazing guests along the way with the Antisocial Podcast. So enough of me. Please enjoy this amazing conversation with this amazing woman, Tara Roam.
Hi, Andy.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
Not too bad. Take two.
Yes. You have all the bits and pieces you need today.
It's all here. It's all ready to go. Thank you so much.
Oh, no worries. Thank you for showing an interest in what I do.
It's a pretty incredible story, and I'm glad that I've been able to grab you while you're stationary.
Oh, yeah, you're very lucky.
So you're about to head off again very shortly?
That's right. Yeah, this afternoon I'll head across the Hawkesbury and start walking part of the Great North Walk.
Wow. Okay. And then I think you mentioned that's sort of later, or sort of the end of June, I believe, and then you're going to be in Adelaide for a period of time?
Adelaide Hills for a few months during winter, where I'll write a book.
Hibernate a bit.
That's right. I don't know how I'm going to do it.
Well, I saw the picture that you put up yesterday, and you're in the gardens enjoying the sun, and you made a mention about some injuries that you're dealing with at the moment, and you've got to sort of rest up a little bit, and you can't do a great deal of walking. What sort of injuries are you plagued with at the moment?
The injury that bothered me last night and the night before is a twisted pelvis. Mm. While I was walking through the outback, I pushed a custom-built alloy barrow for water and food capacity between towns and roadhouses. Mm. And that limited me to walking on road surfaces, dirt roads, bitumen roads. But the side of the road is always on a camber. And as a walker, I'm supposed to walk on the right side of the road. So I had a constant camber and ended up dropping one side of my pelvis and my hip. And pushing the barrow, I twisted that forwards. And I walked with that right through the pain for about a year and a half until I started passing out from it. By then it was a little bit late. My chiropractor did as much as he could to fix that up, and it's basically down to my management.
Yeah, okay. Mm-hmm. So you got to be a little bit more cautious with how much you exert yourself.
That's right. Yeah, and it ended up taking about 6 months off to work through that.
Yep.
And some of the pain was psychological as well, I found. I forced myself to go, okay, it hurts like hell, but I need to go somewhere that's going to feed my soul. Mm. And that's the mountains, the snowy mountains. So I went down to Thredbo and took a week, went off track for a week to a hut in April, May. And it was incredible how much pain just lifted as soon as I was in that spiritually enriching place. But I still had the pain, and I still had to go and get more help with what was left.
But it's amazing. I mean, I think it goes without saying and I would think it's common sense, but it's commonly not practiced. But mind and body are so well connected, and I think we forget that quite often. Like we focus on the physical stuff being the tangible problem or the thing that's in front of us, and just putting aside sort of the mental aspect to it. But it's so intertwined, and they feed off each other that it's that example of just going to a place which your mind gets an opportunity to relax, then suddenly everything else starts to ease as well.
That's exactly right. It surprised me. I had no idea that would happen. I was just following a gut instinct that said you need to be in a better place than this. And it was surprising, and I like to tell lots of people about it. What we feed ourselves with physically, that helps our bodies and minds, but also what we feed ourselves emotionally and spiritually, that helps our whole being.
Oh, absolutely. I think stress is always a big thing that a lot of people deal with, and sometimes people don't even realize they're stressed. There's this underlying tension, and then that can manifest over time, depending on the severity, to all sorts of physical ailments, and it can be quite catastrophic depending on how long you choose to ignore it or become unaware of it. So it's really important, and I guess for you being going through so many extreme set of circumstances that most people would never do or never even think about doing, you're discovering a lot of this stuff out of those those extreme moments, and hopefully other people can sort of learn from what you've gone through.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, it's not just the physical limits that I pushed myself through. Like I would think I reached my limit, but that wasn't the end. That's not all I had, and I dig really deep. And then there was more. I had more to access, more energy, more strength, more mental resilience. But emotionally as well. Oh, man, when you're out there alone for that many weeks and months of your life in each year, it's you discover a lot about yourself, but you discover a lot about your mental strength and what you can handle. We do have limitations, but many of us never reach those limitations in our whole life.
You know where yours are.
Yeah, but I push them too. I reach a limit, and then that becomes my comfort zone, and I think, now how much further can we go?
just that one step further, just each step.
Yeah, slowly.
Before you did I'll get to the big thing is the feat that you've achieved by being, and correct me if I'm wrong here, but the first woman to walk around Australia, the whole of Australia, solo and unassisted. And I know that you've had some other pretty epic journeys along the way. That's probably the big one. But, I mean, leading up to sort of several years ago when you started doing a lot of this stuff in Australia, you'd done a fair bit of overseas travelling already. So is that correct? And you've had a bit of sort of experience of independent mind and putting yourself in uncomfortable situations and being outside of your comfort zone.
Yeah, it's kind of like out of necessity. I want to go somewhere and no one else is going to come with me, so I just take off by myself. I have travelled quite a bit of the globe alone, and when I reach a destination, I immerse myself in that culture and I assimilate to the culture as well. I practice what they practice. I adhere to what they adhere to in terms of like celebrations, respect. I don't become their religion, but I respect their religion. Mm. I dress appropriately for where I am so that I'm treated with respect. If I treat them with respect, I get that in return. But most of the places I go to, there's somewhere amazing and wild to explore and trek through as well. Like in Morocco, it was the Sahara. I took off through the Sahara by myself for a little while. But traveled the length and breadth of the country of Morocco and the Himalayas. I explored those. I had previously read a book by Cyril Wilby. Did you know that Cyril Wilby was the first person to walk the length of the Himalayas?
I did not know that.
Yes, she was. And I read this book back in 2002 in preparation for a trek across Mongolia, which is still pending. And I thought, wow, this is amazing. Why haven't I heard about her? And a lot of people haven't heard about this amazing. She set that record, not just for women, but for all, all people to trek across the Himalayas. And that inspired me to head out there and explore some of it myself. And the fact that she did a lot of that trekking through the Himalayas and Tibet alone, and her stories of the hospitality of the Tibetan culture through the Himalayas, I had no fear. So her experience showed me that I didn't need to fear traveling alone because I would be well looked after along the way.
I guess it's that reassurance through somebody else's stories that, you know, your worst case scenarios or the scenarios that you've created yourself out of, you know, whatever it might be, the media or, you know, family members or anybody else going, oh, that sounds dangerous, and you're by yourself and you're in a foreign land and you don't know the culture or the language or anything like that. And it's always things that we create these barriers for ourselves. You know, reading a first account of somebody who's actually gone and done it instead of somebody that's sitting on the sideline is, yeah, no doubt, extremely reassuring thing to give you that motivation to take the first step.
Oh yeah, I've been very fortunate that I'm not a TV watcher.
That definitely helps.
And yes, because I'm not going in. I don't go into a situation naive and ignorant. I go into a situation with complete trust that I will be looked after, and I don't have anything to fear there. So that makes a huge difference. While I was walking around Australia, people offered me all kinds of things, like from capsicum spray to tasers. I was even offered guns to carry with me.
Wow.
And I thought to myself, if I'm carrying something expecting trouble, I'm going to attract trouble.
Mm-hmm.
If I don't carry a weapon and trust that everything will be okay, then everything will be okay. And it was.
I guess you probably haven't seen the movie Wolf Creek then.
I have.
No, yeah. No, don't watch it then.
I watched it when the first movie came out and I laughed the whole way through. Yeah.
And it's, I mean, I guess it's funny things like that, and they're silly things and they're over the top, and that's the stuff that creates, you know, a narrative in people's minds that they think, well, this is a reason, although it's over the top, this is a reason that I'm going to create for myself that stops me from doing something and stops me from pushing outside my comfort zone. Just even if it's just a fraction, you go, oh, well, I'm scared of those worst case scenarios. But going back to like a lot of that overseas travel, had you, like, from an early age been really interested in sort of traveling, but also just doing a lot of solo stuff and doing, I mean, even just the simplicity of walking? Is that something that you've always been sort of an outdoorsy person or somebody that's always wanted to venture out and just use your feet rather than other forms of transport?
You're right there, yes.
Yeah.
as a kid, my parents took us out on camping holidays to national parks.
Yeah.
And we'd spend those holidays wandering the beaches, the mountains, the bushland, exploring, learning from nature. And so every holiday we'd travel somewhere new, somewhere different. We had our favourites, of course, you know, an annual return to somewhere that we liked. But that instilled in me at a very young age how much nature has to give. But when I finished, it was actually the day after I finished my last HSC exam, I was on a bus out of there. And I've pretty much been travelling since. So from the age of 18, I haven't stayed still for very long in any one place. And I think I'm naturally a gypsy or a vagabond or nomad.
Well, it's probably, I mean, all these things that have led up to these bigger achievements that you can now tick off the list have been this natural progression. You know, it's not something that you've suddenly gone, I mean, you're still outside your comfort zone every single time, but it's sort of been, it hasn't been something that's come from left field where suddenly you've had this light bulb moment to go, I'm going to do something that's completely different to anything I've ever experienced before. It's been a case of, this is just the next natural thing for me to try and achieve or try and tackle and go from there. Even though the next step might be a big one, it's not completely unexpected or surprising.
It also helps to have confidence in yourself. Not too much confidence, of course. You don't want to be overconfident because that leads to trouble in the future. But it was a natural progression. At the age of 12, I read Robin Davidson's book, Tracks.
Mm.
So I'm a vegan, so I'm not a big fan of animal use.
Sure.
for expedition or tourism. But I loved the way she wrote about, I loved the words she used for her experience in solitude with nature, her intrinsic connection to nature and being able to read it, the animals around her, but also the self-awareness that brought with it. And even at 12, I knew I wanted that in my life in the future. And it has been a natural progression towards that. Our family moved down to Kosciuszko National Park in 1988. That kind of ages me a bit, doesn't it? I'm 46 years old.
That's so, all right. I won't tell you how old I was in 1988. I'll leave it at that.
So I became involved in the Gendibine Venture Unit.
Okay.
And we used to go out walking and riding a couple of trips in the mountains as a group, where we had to learn to navigate and get ourselves from A to B each day and over a long weekend. And a friend was in the Edinburgh Award Scheme, so I take along with her when she was out doing her little quests and expeditions. And I had the most amazing geography teacher, John Sim, and he taught us. He took us out into the mountains and taught us safety, survival, navigation, how to read a map and compass, just the basics for bushwalking safety. And that's where I started.
That's amazing to get that sort of education in such a practical way, hands-on way. Because, I mean, I'm just reflecting on when I did geography in school, it was with a blackboard and a whiteboard and in later years, where it was just, here's a bunch of pictures and here's some theory and you learn it. And depending on how much interest you showed as a young kid or a teenager, it was that determined how much you absorbed. But to be able to have that hands-on practical experience, the chances of you finding interest in absorbing that is so much greater, and obviously it's definitely gone in that direction.
Oh yeah, I've used it all since. I haven't stopped using it. It was probably the most valuable lessons that I had in life was out there in nature, learning to read what was around me. But that from there, I continued on and learned snow survival. The same teacher, John Sim, he was the leader of snow sports. This is a public school, mind you, Monero High School.
Wow.
We did snow sports and cross-country skiing.
Incredible.
And during cross-country skiing, we learned snow safety, alpine safety, how to build a snow cave, how to get yourself out of trouble or to prevent getting into trouble. And I did an advanced outback survival course, wilderness remote area, first aid course. All of these different courses have enabled me to go out alone with confidence that I can hopefully prevent getting into trouble, but also extricate myself or other people from that trouble. I have had to call on help once, though.
What was that situation?
It was just recently, end of August last year. I was out on a track and a rock cracked under my foot on a very steep slope. And when the rock cracked, my foot rolled and I collapsed down on top of my ankle and broke it. Dislocated the tibia and broke the fibula. I stood up. I didn't feel it at first, but it wasn't until I took the weight off my foot and I was pulling my body up with my walking poles. And I thought, that's a weird angle. Oh, and then suddenly it's like, oh, no, that's a bad angle. Oh, I went to step down on my foot thinking maybe it's just a sprain. And if I keep using it, it will be okay. But it was all floppy. Oh. I couldn't make any pressure on it. Oh, the words that I used out there on the track.
Depending on how you look at it, at least you were alone and you could at least express yourself that way. But, when you're doing these treks and you're in more remote places, I assume that you'd have like a satellite phone or something like that, that you've got something on hand that in an extreme moment of distress that you do have some form of communication there.
Of course, yeah. I traveled with a satellite phone for a while. And there was one day I was having a very bad day. I'd injured both of my feet down towards Albany. And I thought, oh, I can't walk anymore. I need help. I was pushing the barrow at that stage. And so I couldn't just like flag someone down. I had to flag someone down that could carry the barrow. And it was a very quiet ride and no phone range. So I had to pull out my satellite phone and I tried phoning SES. I couldn't get through. I didn't want it to be a real emergency. So I didn't set off a mayday or anything. And then I tried phoning my parents and they were off doing something else. And then I tried my brother and my sister and everyone was busy doing other things. And I was like, what's the use carrying a stupid satellite phone?
People are going to make themselves available.
I didn't even have to get through to anyone. But I ditched the satellite phone after a while. Western Australia actually has fantastic phone range.
Right. So I guess is that because of just, I guess, there's so many remote areas, and I guess there's a lot of mining industry as well where people just need good coverage anyway. So it's probably, yeah, the infrastructure's there. Because you sort of look at it and go, oh, there's a lot of dead space out there. There's there's a lot of empty space. So you kind of worry about how easy it is to stay connected.
Yeah, a lot of gates that go out to mines, they had phone range for the trucks to call in when they arrived. And you get just random towers out in the middle of nowhere. But the microwave or the frequency direction is very specific down the highway.
Right.
You step off the road 2 or 3 metres, you've lost your phone range.
Oh, incredible.
You go back on the road, you've got fine phone range. But I also carried an EPOB or a PLB, a personal location beacon. Right. That is the most important part of my kit for rescue, in case something really bad goes down. And if I'm conscious and I can use my arms, I can activate the EPOB and emergency. I think there's a satellite. My latitude and longitude is sent by satellite to the Australian Maritime Rescue Service, AMSR, and then they can activate immediately a rescue, a helicopter or SES police will be sent out to collect me, find me and collect me if I have no phone range.
Oh.
And the important thing with the PLB and the EPIRB is you get the one that's registered directly with AMSR. If you get the PLBs that are registered through a third party, the response time is not so fast or accurate.
Right. So better to get the premium product, the premium option.
Yeah, pay a little extra. Yep. Don't go for the gadgets that have all the little toys like the check-ins and the messages.
Reading up online a little bit about some of the journeys that you've had, and before you embarked on the walk around the entire country, you had done some pretty long walks beforehand, like different stages. And I think I've read, it might have been on Australian Geographic, and they're talking about a walk that you'd done, I believe in 2012 or 2010 or something like that. And it was walking across, I think it was the southwest of Australia. and that was sort of leading up to then you eventually going out and doing this longer, more epic walk around the country. But there seemed to be a bit of trouble that alluded in this piece about that experience that you had.
Do you want the long story or the short story?
Give me the long one. It's a podcast.
Okay. So in 2008, I decided that I'm a walker and I'm a cause walker. I'll walk for a purpose. And environmental conservation, protection, those types of ideas and causes were really close to my heart. So I started walking for ocean conservation, and the main issue that was in the media at the time I made this decision was the whaling in the Southern Ocean. So I decided, okay, I'm going to walk to raise awareness about whaling and how we can actively do something to support the people who are out there stopping it. So I walked against whaling, and I raised funds and raised awareness and tried to raise support for Sea Shepherd, who were out there doing something about it. So that was my first walk, the end of 2008, the beginning of 2009, which was around 600 Ks down the southeast coast of Australia. Then another walk was from Melbourne to Newcastle. As a result of that first walk, I was invited to become crew with Sea Shepherd. So I was crew aboard the Steve Irwin.
Oh, wow. Okay.
The ship, the Steve Irwin, for a while. And I didn't see any real action. So I was part of the crew a little bit late, but I was part of the crew when we opened the boat up to public and explained our story and showed people through. So they had a bit of an insight into the lifestyle of an ocean activist.
Incredible.
And after I left the crew, I walked from Melbourne to Newcastle, which was again for marine mammal conservation. And I walked and raised awareness about Sea Shepherd and Orca, Orca O-double-R-C-A, is based in New South Wales. They train and do workshops around the country and in New Zealand for marine mammal rescue and research, but mostly rescue, making sure that we monitor the health of our ocean animals, and any animal that's in distress, we can assist and hopefully return them to their natural environment. And so I did that walk. That was quite a big one. And I was a bit bored, so I took on another walk over in the southwest of WA for shark conservation.
There's some themes here with marine wildlife. So,
I love the ocean, and I love sharks. Sharks are one of my favourite animals, and I learned a lot about the plight of sharks, the number of shark species that were becoming threatened and endangered very quickly in recent times. And I thought, well, they're still doing shark fishing commercially down in southwest WA, but there's a buyout scheme. The government had just introduced a buyout scheme where they'll pay, I think it was $100,000 to the boat owners to change to some other form of fishing or an entirely different way of making their money. And I had no idea how volatile it was going to be. from the first week of that walk, from Perth down, or Fremantle down to Esperance, I was receiving death threats. People were stalking me through their towns and down the highway. Yeah. Glass bottles were being thrown out windows at me as they drove past. I was being invited out to be shark bait on their boats, and I was alone. I didn't have a support crew. No. Very few people over there knew or understood what I was doing. So I became quite sick after that. I left that walk early. I managed to walk 450 kilometres of a planned 1,400 kilometre walk, but it was so frightening that I had to bail on that one. And I thought I'll be fine, you know, I'll get back to the East Coast and I'll start planning another walk and everything will be okay. But it wasn't. I ended up hiding. I went into hiding. Depression, post-traumatic stress disorder set in, and I became scared of humans. If I went outside, it was at night.
I was just going to say, and sorry to interrupt, but one of the things I was just thinking of in that experience, and the natural the natural result of going through that kind of experience, which most people don't you know, are luckily not going through those sort of experiences. But what did it teach you about people? Is that too deep? Is that a question that could go on for another a few hours? I guess for me, like, just hearing from a high level, it sounds like, you know, when people are threatened or they don't understand something, then people react in a very irrational way. But no. I mean, for you to be impacted in such a way, and naturally so, and I'm sure you're probably alluding to this, and I probably interrupted you too early, but I mean, what came out on the end of it? So, I mean, was there something that you took away from this experience that was actually sort of a rewarding experience in hindsight, that you were able to learn something about human behaviour?
You're hoping for some insight, aren't you? No. I didn't. Sorry. I came away very fearful of what could potentially have happened to me, very disappointed. Bitterly disappointed by the lack of support that I had over there, because not everyone there wants to kill everything in the ocean. Yeah. There are a large group and lots of communities over there who are dedicated to protecting the environment, but they hadn't come on board, so I didn't have their support. So the result of that for me probably was unhelpful. It definitely was unhelpful. But that instilled a fear in humans. But thankfully, through the next walk, the walk around Australia, I was able to learned that basic human instinct is to want to help, to support. We're compassionate, loving people. But I was walking for a completely different cause and under another name as well. And one of the reasons why I made the name change for the walk around Australia was to protect myself from anyone who had remembered my previous name.
Yeah.
As I walked through that area.
Was that sort of a mental thing for you? I mean, obviously there's a reality behind it, which makes sense. But for you, was that an added piece of support to help you push yourself to make that next step, to take on this next challenge for yourself? Because I'm just thinking after that experience, which, well, you've said it, but no doubt is completely a traumatic experience, and having to deal with the consequences of that, you know, most people would just go, you know what, that's a sign, and I'm never going to do anything like this ever again. So, you know, and for you, you've ramped it up, you've upped the ante, and you've taken on this next thing. So I assume that some of these tweaks and these changes that you've made have been sort of things that have helped you mentally to take the plunge and to take that step.
Yes. I discovered my purpose by walking, and I'm a very stubborn person. unless my life is being threatened, mm-hmm. I will push and push and push until I've achieved the right outcome. And during my so I was hospitalized. I ended up being hospitalized, and I tried to take my life 3 times as a result. Well, it was a build-up of years of trauma and depression, and this was what happened in the Southwest was the last straw for me.
Sure, okay.
So I ended up trying 3 times, and I was hospitalized twice. And I went through a few different counsellors and government psychologists, and I eventually found a private psychologist who pointed out to me how much I had been using walking throughout my entire life as therapy.
There you go.
It was a way for me to cope with life. So I used to work a fair bit of seasonal work, and mostly in male-dominant industries, and at the end of the season, I would disappear into the bush and go walking and walking and walking. And that was my therapy.
Free therapy.
It is free therapy. So as complementary therapy, my psychologist recommended that I go walking every day. And I started off with just short walks up country lanes. And that became longer walks again. So previous to that, I was using, I go out walking for days, weeks even, and I just loved being out in nature. And I disconnected when I was unwell and suicidal. I disconnected from nature. I forgot all the things that I loved because I was focused so much on all the bad stuff that was going on. And as I walked, I reconnected, and I lost focus with the bad stuff, and I was able to concentrate on the beautiful memories and the natural beauty that was surrounding me, and started to meet really nice, friendly people that I could trust, and shared smiles with complete strangers. And I thought, well, people aren't so bad after all, are they?
Definitely a long process to get to that point. I mean, I can't even begin to imagine like how challenging that would have been personally for you. And up until that moment where somebody from the outside looking in has seen something that, you know, for them probably looks so clear, but for you, you're so clouded in all the trauma and the experiences that you've had to say that, you know, walking's your thing. But up until that, I mean, it would have been such a challenging period of time in your life.
It was. It was frightening. Yeah. Every time I relapsed, I was so scared that I was going back to where I was before. I used Lifeline a few times. Yep. I'd call Lifeline when I relapsed and just talk to people. Just talking and talking through the fears that I was having, the confused thoughts. And it's really interesting when you start talking out aloud to someone that's not judging, not in not asking questions, but just prompting you to keep talking and keep delving deeper into the background feelings, the causes of these feelings, whether these feelings are rational or not. They don't even have to ask, is this rational? Because as soon as those words start coming out of your mouth, it's like, this doesn't make any sense. Why was I thinking this? It's a little embarrassing, actually. It's like, my brain, it's so twisted. It's like, it's illogical.
and most people, a lot of people would never even get to that point where they're giving themselves an opportunity to verbalize a lot of this stuff that people keep bottled up. So while it might be irrational when it comes out, while it's still bottled inside, it becomes a reality. It becomes this thing that is so real, and you live in fear of exposing this to anybody else. But you know, for you, I mean, unfortunately, you know, you were put into a situation where in these extreme situations where you had to go down this path and verbalize to other people. But obviously that's had a really positive outcome. But I completely understand. I know so many people that bottle things up and never express themselves. And and then in those occasions where people do open up a little bit, you can see the relief that washes over them, just even slightly, that, wow, like this, just a couple of minutes of talking is making all the difference. It's just, it sounds so trivial and simple and even petty, depending on, well, if you're the person before you do it, but, oh, wow, what an outcome.
Mm. It was one of the reasons why I chose to walk around Australia for suicide prevention, raising awareness about Hope and Recovery and Lifeline. And I raised over $20,000 for Lifeline's hotline as well, walking around for the first 4 years. But part of my recovery was researching the labels that I had been given, depression, post-traumatic stress disorder, social anxiety, and Asperger's. So I did a bit of research on mostly the mental health issues, the depression and the post-traumatic stress disorder. But, you know, when you're surfing information and you go off on tangents and you look at, what's this report on Australian mental health? And you go over and you have a look at that. And I was shocked at how poor the services are available in rural and remote Australia. And I thought to myself, well, I think I can make a difference. I've experienced this in rural Australia. I can take my story and encourage other people to seek help, but also raise awareness about recovery and give people hope. And then I thought, well, I'll do this for Lifeline as well. And I started speaking to different groups about suicide prevention and my experience in the health system. And it wasn't so much a walk about raising awareness about Lifeline and raising funds for Lifeline. It was more, I was an accidental roadside counsellor. It is just amazing. I would speak, I'd share my story, share the adventure and the reason behind it all on regional radio, mostly ABC radio and the local newspapers. And so many people out there listen to ABC radio, their community radio, and they'd hear this story. They'd hear my story, my interview, and they would come out to meet me on the road just to talk. And very often I was the first person they'd ever opened up to about what they're struggling with. So I still get a little bit choked up. Yeah. it was such a privilege. And I'll never, ever take it for granted how many people trusted me with their stories.
and what a flip from the previous experiences that you had that gave you all those challenges that you had to work through, and almost, you know, humanity redeeming itself through this cause that you've supported. And it's just absolutely incredible. I mean, what sort of examples, I mean, these people are coming out to you and you've had these conversations with people, but what sort of things are people dealing with? Is there sort of, I mean, obviously there's specific scenarios and events that are happening in people's lives, but is there common things that people, especially in regional Australia, that are dealing with, or things that are really sort of causing challenges for them?
So in some areas, the biggest one was the threat of bank foreclosure on their farms, especially during times of drought.
Yeah.
or where they've lost a harvest, a hail, or birds, they're struggling to make ends meet, and the farms down their necks, the banks down their neck, wanting to foreclose on them, and that's a massive stress for them. And there are a lot of new initiatives, community initiatives and programs starting up in these areas where the farmers can support each other. But when I walked through, there really wasn't much out there. One farmer didn't know that their neighbour was having the same trouble as they were having because they weren't going to speak about it. Yeah. Some of them had never even spoken to their family about how much they were struggling because they were scared that their family would leave them. Mm. So that was an opportunity for me. Every opportunity, I took that and I gave them a lifeline card, and I encouraged them to create a support network around them, find other people who they can talk to and share with. And up north, more regional and remote WA, Northern Territory, where there was a lot of youth suicide, especially amongst the First Nations communities. Mm. A lot of them would approach me and just in desperation, what do we do? How can we stop this? We've tried everything, and all I could do was just listen to their story, listen to them express their feelings. I don't have the answers for them apart from encouraging them to continue their community support for the entire community, especially the youth. And let the youth know that they're loved. But a lot of people would pull up on the side of the road, and just in the last week or two, someone in their family or their community had taken their lives. Mm. And just to cry with them.
I live on the south coast, but I'm in Sydney all the time, and I've grown up in Brisbane, I've grown up in Sydney, and most of my life has been sort of in metro built up areas. And I think, you know, I've done some time out in regional Australia, but for the most part, I mean, my experiences and everything that I know is based around the convenience and the opportunities that are at my fingertips, and not just through tangible things, but also having a whole range of different human options as well, having lots of different people to connect with and learn and grow and all these great positive things. And we're so disconnected sometimes from what's happening in other parts of our same country. And our country is huge, but we are small in the grand scheme of things as far as population. And I think we just forget what sort of things people go through. And I think it's that disconnect which causes a lot of issues with things such as funding or awareness or providing or creating programs for people to give somebody some option or some way out or some solution to whatever that issue might be.
A lot of communities just take it on themselves because the government's not providing people or services regularly. Like that a psychologist or a counsellor might go to their community or their town, but like for 2 days in every 3 months as part of their circuit, and not everyone that needs help is going to get help. And a lot of people who miss out on that help are like at their wit's end. Like, I know I need help, but I don't know where to get it. Thankfully, Lifeline is just a phone call away. So public phones, mobiles, home phones, satellite phones, you can call Lifeline and chat with somebody. Lifeline do also need a lot of volunteer phone counsellors to take the increased number of calls that they're receiving, so they're not putting people on hold either.
Yeah.
So that's a big need, people who are willing to listen and to be trained to listen as well. But a lot of different places in Australia are struggling with a lot of different things. And on the East Coast, we can be distracted by everything that's around us. We take for granted the accessibility.
Absolutely.
Especially in the wet season, they can be completely isolated. They can be an island surrounded by water, no way in, no way out except by air. And they're reliant on radio and phone.
Well, I mean, I grew up in... When I was a kid, I grew up in Cunnamulla, which was like 10 hours west of Brisbane, and I lived a little while in Emerald in central Queensland, and Rockhampton, which is a little bit a bigger town. But I remember growing up as a kid and going through wet seasons and having to deal with flooding and you know, the army coming in and having to bail people out. We'd all be on the oval of this local sporting ground and going through, for a lot of people that weren't used to it, you know, something that's a little bit traumatizing, especially as a kid, because you just go, oh God, what's going on? But for a lot of these people that live in these areas, you know, for regular wet seasons and being on rural properties where there's not a lot of people around, that feeling of isolation is literal, but it's also, you know, something that's taken on mentally as well in a large dose.
Yeah, they're used to this type of isolation. They've chosen this this lifestyle. It's not necessarily isolating, psychologically isolating. It's physically isolating. Mm. But when an emergency happens, that's when it does feel like you're in a very lonely situation. And you're totally reliant on outside help. And those situations will stay with you for a long time through life. And it helps to talk about it. Mm-hmm. It helps to seek professional assistance as well to process the trauma that's associated with it. Some people really are very good at locking it away, bottling it up. But we should all talk through these situations, no matter how we feel. It's good to discuss it and delve into our feelings, into our memories. I found some of the areas I went through, like cyclone country. I had a couple of cyclones on the west coast and some flooding as well. The resilience, the local resilience, is amazing.
Yeah, yeah.
It was quite inspiring, actually. It's just another cyclone.
We'll deal with it.
The long band together, patch the place up, reopen, and it's all good. But sometimes it's just a little harder to cope with than other times, and sometimes it will build up over several events. It depends on how dramatic and how traumatic it is as to the effect it has on each individual.
It's definitely an eye opener, especially for people that have grown up in more, you know, built up areas with a lot more opportunity and people surrounding them where they've got a lot of, I guess, creature comforts and things that you take for granted. And to hear of what other people have to go through and experience and choose to live a particular way as well, for a lot of them, it's definitely an eye-opener. And I think it's a healthy perspective to appreciate some of the creature comforts that a lot of us take for granted, but also to then start thinking, well, you know, what can we do, even though we might be, you know, thousands of kilometers away or hundreds of kilometers away, what can we do to provide as much assistance and support, even if it's emotionally, to people that need it and don't have these things at their fingertips?
It's interesting, isn't it? How we, on the East Coast, on mainstream media, you don't hear about something until it's reached a stage where it's desperate, like the droughts. The droughts are happening all over Australia all the time in different places. They're experiencing a drought or flooding or a hail storm has just taken out an entire crop. All their earnings for the year has just been destroyed in one storm. You don't hear about these small things that are happening. You hear about it when it's desperate, when it's reached critical stage. But in this day and age, we have no excuse to be ignorant, because we have access to the world in the palm of our hand. We can see what's happening in other regions of Australia. We don't have to rely on morning TV or evening news to tell us what's happening. We can actually see what's really happening on the ground. Especially if you look at regional news, the regional newspapers, community radio stations, they keep it real.
Mm.
And they support their community by raising awareness, not just within their community, but around the country.
I think that connectedness, you know, not just in the local area and, you know, interstate, nationally and globally, it's probably helped a lot of these people in these more remote areas now. Although, you know, we could go down a whole another rabbit hole about, you know, government coverage of you know, internet and all sorts of things like that. But I think, you know, things are improving where a lot of these people that probably only could rely on whoever was in their local area, which could be very few, now have access to other resources that are not just in that area. And it could be just be things of material to read, things to listen to, but also having, you know, the opportunity to be able to interact with people and get perspective or even just get some emotional support as well. So there, no doubt there are some improvements there, but I mean, you know, it's a slow process.
Yeah, school of the air is no longer just radio.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, incredible, isn't it?
Yeah, it makes schooling so much more interactive, so much more exciting for the kids out there living on the stations.
That's right.
Yeah, they feel connected to not just to Australia but to the world through school of the air.
It definitely opens it up, and I think people understand that the possibilities are far greater than they've ever been before. So there's a silver lining to, I guess, the direction that we're all going as a human species with technology. So there's a lot of benefits there. Of course, there's always cons to it as well. But, you know, especially talking about things such as mental health, I think if people are more connected and they can see what else is going on and learn from others and even get some assurance that what they're feeling is not something to be ashamed of, and to understand that it is normal to feel a lot of these things, then that might be just a little bit of strength that might get them out of a really dark spot at one moment in time as well. So there's definitely some positivity there.
Definitely be used as a support network.
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely. Now, was I correct before when I said that you are the first woman to walk around the whole of Australia?
Solo without a support vehicle.
So, I mean, are you getting a lot of recognition now off the back of that? Because I know that I was reading online, I think there was some challenges around a lot of the things that you were doing were just not getting recognised. And I know that you were doing it for different motivations, of course, to raise awareness for causes and things that were close to you. But, you know, this seems to be a challenge to get people on board and to understand what you're doing. Is that getting easier for you now?
Oh, look, the last week has been amazing. When I went through Port Macquarie a few weeks ago, my family, my parents are living up near Port Macquarie, so they were quite keen to share the story and to recognise the achievement. And I thought, wow, this is amazing. And a lot of the media attention was accidental because I happened to walk through another story about walking. And like a local walking track is going to have some money put into it to upgrade it. And I just happened to be walking around Australia along this section of track that day.
Incredible. Funny how things happen.
Yeah, it was incredible. It was amazing. And I thought, well, this is it. I've reached my peak. I don't need any more. A friend who writes for Lonely Planet, George Dunford, he did an interview for Lonely Planet News. Australian Geographic Society is my sponsor. So they ran the story on their website and on social media as well, which was a huge support. Youth Hostel Association Australia, they ran a story in their internal staff news as well while I was walking down the East Coast. So the staff were aware of that I might be coming through.
Perfect.
This is really good support. But, yeah, that peak that I reached at Port Macquarie was like, oh, this is great. This is exactly what I wanted and what I needed. But now I've finished. It's, it was just I didn't have to phone any media. I didn't write or phone to any media when I arrived in Newcastle and they were there.
Yeah, that's what you want. That's fantastic. And I went online and had a look at some of the pages and your website, and I went on Facebook as well, and I saw that you had Facebook Live going and you could see people with you, and I thought that's really cool because, you know, it's not only about the whole thing of your background and your upbringing about being outdoors, and you mentioned before you don't watch TV and just getting out and connecting with the real world, but to see, I guess, the other end of the spectrum where you've embraced, you know, the connectiveness of technology as well, and you're bringing people along, because I wouldn't have discovered you if it wasn't for things such as social media and people sharing some things around, and then to see other people through these new ways of connecting is absolutely incredible, and no doubt that will just continue to help build further awareness for the incredible things that you've done and continue to do.
And for other women as well, other adventurers. Women adventurers are not recognised nearly as much as male adventurers, and quite often a man will do something really, like I was going to say really small, a male adventurer or athlete might ride 1,000 kilometres and receive national coverage on every station. And there's a woman out there walking around Australia alone for 4 years, and it's media silence. That was disheartening. Yeah, it was really hard. Yeah. And I'm not alone in experiencing that. A lot of women will reach out and ask for support but not receive anything. In fact, quite often be completely ignored. Their request isn't even replied to. And finding support with companies, sponsorship support, is extremely difficult. If it's something smaller, shorter, they're more likely to support you because you have a higher potential of succeeding it and it's more believable. But if it's like, I'm going to walk around Australia by myself, no one's ever done this before. Well, no woman's ever done this before. And they're like, yeah, right, okay. Yeah, good luck. You're not exactly what we're looking to support right now. That was a common response.
It's amazing, isn't it?
They could have had their name, their logo on my clothing, on my pack, on my barrow, wearing it for 4 years, but they've missed those opportunities because I wasn't taken seriously. And it was hard, but it also gave me more determination to succeed.
Absolutely. And I think, I'm always about the silver lining and in hindsight and trying to find the best thing out of a situation. And I think now that gives your story an extra element of importance. There's an additional message there, and it's not just about what you've achieved and the causes that you've supported and you've pushed so hard for and those stories that have been connected with it, but it's about the additional things about not getting recognised and about, you know, encouraging women to do incredible things and to continue to do incredible things, because women have been doing amazing things for centuries, and it's just a case that people don't hear about it, and that's really unfortunate and completely unfair, and that's happened for a whole range of different reasons. But it's not a case that suddenly women have come out of the darkness, out of the cave, and have suddenly started to do these incredible things. There's so many amazing women in history that have achieved amazing things, and in some cases, things that majority of men would never be able to do themselves. And I think for you, you've got a story that is not only just about you, but it's about a bigger picture, and it's further awareness and further indication and validation of what we should be thinking about and paying attention to.
I found this year, it started at the end of last year, and is continuing through this year, there is amazing media support for women's achievements, not just in adventure, but in all across the board. Women are being recognised for the amazing things that they're doing, the change that they're making in the world. Volunteers, scientists, explorers, it's very encouraging, and I hope this trend increases and continues. I hope not too many blokes are jealous of us getting so much attention this year, because it's long overdue.
Oh, that's right. Back off a little bit, yeah. I think it's fantastic, and I think as a male, and I've certainly, I mean, I've grown up in a very stereotypical sort of generation, and I've lived a balance between some regional life and also living in cities, but I've very much experienced what the boys' clubs are all about, And I've seen the stigmas and also the favoritism of what men have over women in certain aspects. And it's something that I think subconsciously you accept because it's just normal and that's what you know. And it's only when people start to pipe up and make a bit of noise and highlight what's going on, which is right in front of our faces, that many people just don't understand. They just don't realize. And it's only until... in your story, doing something that's absolutely incredible and so dramatically different to what most people would ever even consider doing, is when people suddenly go, oh, well, yeah, okay, maybe there is something here. Maybe I need to look at things a little bit differently. Maybe I need to be a bit more balanced in my judgment, in my decisions that I make in everyday life as well. And it is going in the right direction. And it's like anything, when you change behaviors and you change culturally the way that we approach everyday life, it's a long road. And you're not short of long roads experienced, and no doubt you're going to have a whole range of them in the future as well.
Oh yeah, I plan on continuing. It will be extremely difficult stopping for 3 months to write a book.
Well, I'm not going to keep you for too much longer, but the book thing. So is this going to be focused on this particular trip that you've just done with going around Australia, or is it going to be more of life to date now and seeing where you're up to and where the future holds?
It will be a collection of short adventure stories.
Fantastic.
So the main story, of course, will be the walk around Australia because that's the bulk of my travels, travel stories. But it's been about 22,000 kilometres of solo trekking here in Australia and in other places around the world. So I've been, people, family, friends have been nagging me for years since I was about 21 to write a book.
And
eventually I'm going to get around to it, and I'll include some of these other adventures that have contributed to the 22,000 kilometres.
Fantastic.
So it'll be here in Australia, in the wilderness, coastal wilderness, mountain wilderness, and a lot of amazing, beautiful cultures and countries around the world.
I think there's a lot that can be learned from what you've experienced firsthand, and the fact that you're willing to, and I can't even begin to imagine what challenges you're going to face sitting down stationary for 3 months to try and write all this out. But I'm extremely... I'm excited to see what's going to come of it, because I think there's a lot of things and that need to be shared. And I think the fact that you're investing that amount of time and you're taking that next step to document everything is going to be really beneficial for a lot of other people.
Yeah, thank you. So if you look out for a book called Terra Roams, I changed my name to Terra Rome legally. It's the name on my driver's license because I wanted it to mean something to me significantly in my life. So terra is the Latin word for earth or dirt or the ground, and I want to feel grounded, and I love earth, I love nature, everything around me, and roam. I'm always roaming. I'm a vagabond, and I thought, well, if I'm going to write a book and become a speaker, then my name may as well represent who I am and what I am. So my name is also my brand.
Well, I mean, how's that for significance? And to be able to, you know, create something that you own and you've got meaning that's deep, that's attached to it, it just adds so much more to it. And, you know, to be able to make that decision is pretty incredible. But I'll have to update everything and let everybody know when that all eventually happens. And you've got the new book out, and no doubt you'll be wanting to tell more and more people about it. So I'll definitely do my part to help you along with the people that listen to this podcast. But absolutely incredible. But before we wrap it up, I believe is it terraroams.earth is the website.
It's a real domain.
Yeah, fantastic. Amazing. So people can go there, and that's obviously, you know, the first landing page of everything that is attached to you and what you do. Is there anything else that people should check out or have a look at or consider, or even some of these courses with Lifeline? Is there anything that people should be thinking about?
Oh, Look, my big thing at the moment is safety. A lot more people are seeking adventure now, and not everyone is trained to explore as far as they do. So I encourage people to go and do a wilderness course, a navigation course, bush survival, bushcraft. Learn how to protect yourself, prevent things from going wrong, and to be able to reduce the chances of things escalating to a stage where you can't receive help. So be trained. Have the knowledge and the experience together when you go out into the bush and exploring the wilderness and nature. When you go cave hunting and waterfall hunting, do it smartly. Yeah. Do it with intelligence.
Well, I think that's very smart, because as we were talking, I'm thinking in the back of my mind, I wouldn't mind going for a walk. So I think you're inspiring a lot of people to do some incredible things, and obviously, through encouraging women to do incredible things as well. You want to make sure that that's backed up with do it, but do it the right way, and don't be reckless about it. There's definitely a correct way of approaching whatever you choose to do. So very important message.
And when things don't go wrong, it's much more enjoyable.
No doubt. Well, I would love to keep in contact with you. And I think as you progress further with the book and those things start to become a reality and they're out there, I'd love to have another chat with you and learn about some of the experiences post-writing as to how that all goes, because no doubt that's going to be the next the next chapter in your life as far as another challenge and something new that you're going to be doing. So I'd love to hear how that goes, and obviously help other people connect with you and your book as well.
Oh, absolutely. I'm going to ride my bike around Australia. And anyone listening to this podcast, if you like riding and you like touring, then come and join me as I ride around Australia next year.
Oh, well, okay. So you're not going to be slowing down. You'll slow down momentarily, but that's it. It's going to keep going. Up the ante.
It speeds up. Those speeds on the ride of cycling a bike is going to be uncontrollable. So much faster than walking.
Oh, incredible. Well, I think that's a good place for us to catch up before you go on that next journey, and we'll get I'll do my part to bring some further awareness for that next the next one you're about to embark on, because that sounds like an exciting one.
Oh, that'll be awesome. I look forward to that.
Very good. Well, I'll let you continue to recover and rest up before the next trip, and we'll be in touch.
Oh, thank you, Andy. I look forward to it. Great. Awesome. It was really good chatting with you.
Yeah, likewise. Thank you so much, Tara.
No worries.
Thank you. Thank you, everyone. I really hope you enjoyed that chat with Tara. Wow, what an incredible woman, and what an amazing set of achievements that she's got under her belt so far. And I don't think there's too many people that can say that they've done what Tara has done so far. And as you heard at the end of that conversation, she is not slowing down at all. So lots of stuff to come, and I'll definitely have to catch up with her next year before she kicks off on that next big adventure. Now, if you want to reach out to Tara, you can do so by going to terraroams.earth, and you can also search for Tara on Facebook and Instagram by searching Tara Roam, which is TerraRoam. Now, as mentioned at the beginning of the episode, if you need some help or you know somebody that needs some help, I strongly encourage you, if you are in Australia, we're very lucky to have Lifeline as a resource. You can go to lifeline.org.au, or if you want to speak to somebody over the phone, you can utilize Lifeline's crisis line, which is 13 11 14. Or I strongly encourage you that if you are ever in any signs of danger or in a critical place, then you need to utilize 000. And if you're in the United States, it's 911, or the number that's equivalent in your country. Even if you're not in Australia, or you don't believe that you know anybody that needs this support, or you don't believe that you need this support, I would strongly encourage you to understand where these resources are, who are the organizations who provide these services, because you just never know. You might need it, or someone very close to you might need it. So I'll put a bunch of links in the show notes over at andysocial.net. So please go over there, have a gander, go and check it all out, because it's good stuff to have at your fingertips if need be. Now, we're almost there. Before we wrap it up, you guys know the drill. If you want to support this podcast, and thank you so much to the people that do all of these things, it's absolutely amazing. You can leave reviews on Facebook or on Apple Podcasts or on Stitcher or anywhere on the internet. I do not care. It can be on a message board. It can be wherever. If you want me to see it, send me a screenshot. I'd love to be able to say thank you personally. In addition to that, you can buy an Andy Social t-shirt. You can buy the USB pass, which has got the first 100 episodes of the podcast. You can shout me a beer via paypal.me on the andysocial.net website. You can tag friends, you can like, you can retweet, you can love heart, all that social media love. It goes a hell of a long way. And all this stuff that you guys do means a hell of a lot to me. So thank you very, very much. Now I'm going to wrap it up right now, guys. Until next week, heaps more episodes to come, lots and lots of people coming. So I'm looking forward to sharing all these great conversations with you. Until then, take care, everyone. Ta-ta. You're a day, you're a day.